morning. Today is Thursday, July the 23rd, 208th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Public Works Director.
Tom Matson.
Oh, you were afraid I was going to say underdog or Superman?
Probably the first one.
Yeah. No, that's just how we feel we are, right?
Well, I feel the second
being an
way.
Underdog.
I'm actually the first
one.
Oh,
yeah. Keep being brought into line, huh? Oh, our quote this morning comes from Willa Cather, 1918. Winter lies too long in country towns and hangs on until it's stale, old, and shabby. Yeah, we could use a little winter, I think, huh?
I think we could use several winters.
Yeah. What does the drought do for the roads? Does it screw things up?
No, the drought is actually wonderful for roads because it's water that causes all of our problems.
Well, but there's a static pressure, you know, where you need a certain amount of liquid, otherwise things become brittle. I was wondering if the underpinnings of some of the older roads might actually kind of be set up. So now if there is a normal winter or the El Nino they're talking about, now it's a lot more fragile than what it would normally be.
I disagree with that, basically. I mean, Humboldt is not in a water shortage and a major drought. It's nice not to have the heavy rains, but we're actually pretty close to average last year, which is rather nice. It's the heavy rains that kill us because they blow out the roads. They cause the mudslides, the erosion downhill if a culvert plugs. You know, they just eat away underneath the road, and next thing you know, your road is in the river.
So you were really sympathetic to, who would it be? Who's the National Road Guys?
National Road
Guys. Caltrans.
Caltrans is state highways.
Okay, so when 10 washed out.
Yeah, that's Caltrans.
Your Caltrans buddies?
That's my Caltrans buddies.
Oh.
And it's just, you get overwhelmed when situations like that hit. There's not much you can do. It's just...
Well, you know, you build on sand, guess what happens?
You build in a flash flood plain and you get flash floods.
Yeah, every once in a while things happen. Are we ready for the next heavy winter here?
We're as ready as we can be with the resources we have available. I mean, our people...
No hedging, man.
That's the truth.
Are we ready? I mean, if we had what they're talking about, say 25% above normal,
we would have a lot of damage
from delayed maintenance,
from the inability to get out there, not having enough people in the storms out on the roads unplugging culverts. We got, you know, thousands of culverts and an average of 7 to 9 people on each road crew that cover 200 miles of road. We know our bad roads, and we're focused on those in the heavy rains. Matole Road, Alder Point Road, they get hit hard all the time. You can count
all
them
your
off
favorites.
On your hands.
Yeah.
But the crews know the bad spots. What affects us most unchanged is if we have a major earthquake, because then it changes things underground. And after a major earthquake, then our problem sites change because the geology changes. And it's kind of fun, actually, to find out what changed and see what's failing now versus this thing you thought was going to fail is now stable because the underground water has been channeled differently by a crack underground.
Well, we'll find out what other things he defines as fun when we come back. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Tom Matson. Tom, the concept of deferred maintenance, delayed maintenance, ignored maintenance, whatever it is, you know, based on whatever the funding is, with the culverts? Is it the debris that causes the problem, or is it just the amount of water and water pressure that causes the problem?
The debris is a major issue, but the other issue is a lot of the culverts got replaced at the same time, right after 1964 flood. They're all metal, and they're all rusting, and they're all starting to fail at the same time, and it's difficult to replace everything at once. So we've had a program since I came in 98 of converting over to plastic piping and trying to buy a regular amount every year and have a regular culvert replacement program every year so we don't get overwhelmed. But you get the two situations. You get the debris that plugs the culvert and then the water goes over the road, or the culvert is rusted out and the flow through the culvert just eats through the bottom where it's rusted out and just takes the road prism away.
So, 98, it's what, about 18 years?
17, 18.
How much longer on the replacement program before you're on to now a cycle that can be maintained?
I don't think the program ever ends. It's like surface maintenance. You're continually having to do it on a regular basis because you try to schedule it out. You know, culverts, generally a good plastic culvert in a stable situation is going to last 50 years easily. The older metal ones, they were solid, they were thick, they lasted 40 to 50 years. The newer ones are a lot thinner. And so, yeah, they, you know, can say they're corrugated, but the minute you scratch it, you're through the plated, but the minute you scratch the plating, it starts to rust.
It's like a nail.
Exactly.
You hit it the first time, okay, now it's rusty.
Exactly. And so, you know, the system is old. It has not had proper maintenance for, you know, our road maintenance budget today is about the same as it was when I came in 98. It's roughly $10 million a year that's available for maintenance. When I came in, I think the price of asphalt was $38 a ton. Now it's pushing 100. So the budget's the same. The costs go up, and you just...
Is plastic cheaper?
It's cheaper in the long run for the life cycle.
Okay, when you go to buy a foot of it,
it's generally
cheaper than the metal?
Yeah, generally.
Okay, so that's a plus then.
It's a plus for us. It's only been the last about 20 years where people have been really using a lot of plastic pipe.
Oh,
because,
really?
Yeah, before that it was strictly metal everywhere. And you have to watch where you do it. If you're in a forested area where you have a high chance of forest fires, you got to make a debate whether you want to go plastic. You don't want it to melt down. And that has happened. More forest fires go through areas with plastic culverts and it just burns the culvert out.
Really?
Yeah.
How would it get...
It's petroleum.
Right. The
plastic is petroleum. You get a fire.
So it
fire,
just comes up to the end of it?
It just burns it. And it just ignites.
All the way through?
It'll burn all the way through.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you get a slightly smaller pipe and replace it?
If you get there before the hole collapses.
Okay. Oh, so that's part of the strength of the integrity of the roadbed.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to find that as you're leaving. Quickly.
As you're leaving quickly, no, unless you're driving really fast up towards a ramp over it.
Yeah, or a really big truck with really big tires.
Yeah, we have a lot of those.
Yeah.
We have a lot of those in this county.
So what does it cost to replace a culvert?
It's usually anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 on a normal culvert.
Regular, normal.
You're talking a day's work with a labor crew. You're having to do traffic control. You got the backhoe out there digging the trench. You're putting the culvert together, and then you're recompacting and hopefully, if we have money, putting asphalt on top of the trench.
Getting it close enough so that you don't have a thunk-thunk as you go over.
You'll have the thunk-thunk most of the time.
So how many of these bad boys do you try to work in a summer, fall?
We usually try to do about 400 feet a year, I think, is what we buy in excess. I mean, all bets are off in an emergency. You just got to go do what you got to do. But most of the crews try to buy a couple hundred feet.
And a road is 20 feet?
20 to 30 feet, generally, most of our back roads.
Two laner,
you're going to have 30 feet of culvert because if the road's 20 feet, then you got it below the road on the prism. Some of them can be, I've got culverts that are hundreds of feet long.
Well, sure, yeah, depending on the specific situation.
Exactly.
So you get... only about 15 or 20 a year?
On average, yeah. And we.
And you have 700.
We've got thousands.
Oh, thousands.
There's thousands of culvert in the county.
So there's really no way to change. Maybe at the end of 50 years, you might.
Exactly. The hope is to replace more than fail, frankly. That way, at least we're trying to get ahead of the game. You know, in a bad storm, we're chasing failures all over the place, whether it's plugs or collapses. Generally, they're not too bad in situations, but even last winter, we lost a section of a county road where a creek ran through a 3-foot culvert that, you know, they put in years ago, and it should have been a 4 or 5 foot culvert. It got overwhelmed, blew out the road.
Just absolutely misfigured.
Yeah, so we just said that, you know, we have rail cars sitting around for these kind of situations. So we just drug a rail car up there, threw it across the creek channel until we had time to put the new culvert in.
Well, I guess that kind of explains Union Street then, huh?
Union Street's a different story. Union Street is a major planned project. However, it may not seem that way to a lot of people. That has been in the programming for years, dealing with moving PG&E facilities, telephone facilities, all the water lines that are under there, everything we found under there, including old redwood stumps and planking, and a road and a marsh. It's been a challenge, but we have a really good contractor on it, and we'll positively will be done this fall.
And we'll positively be back. KINS News and Information Time.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Public Works Director Tom Matson. Tom, before we get into the airport and all that kind of stuff, you said with the Union Street, which is, I guess, south of Eureka, but north of Herrick.
Yeah.
I'm trying, you know, for folks that are unfamiliar with it, it's one of those parts that are county that most people think are city.
It runs through the county till it touches the city, and it's a major connection outside of Highway 101 to get through the backside of Eureka.
Now, it's also, I think, one of the few roads that still reflects what Eureka used to be. It's not been smushed in and filled up, and you haven't had the D8 cats make everything nice and smooth and flat like most of Eureka has had. What made this project kind of cool?
It's really the collaboration between multiple entities to get something done, coordinating between PG&E and AT&T and HCSD, because they all have to get their stuff moved before we can touch anything. The geography of the area, I mean, it's not somewhere you're going to build a nice straight flat road. It's, you know, through marshes, it's up and down steep grades. Got properties on both sides of the road real close to the property, so you got to watch out to not cause somebody's, you know, side of their fence to fall down when you're digging out there, and then all of a sudden you run into a pipe that nobody knew was there, and you got to call another agency in. Everybody's scratching their head. Nobody wants to pay for it. Then we all figure it out and move forward.
So what were some, you said some old artifacts and some of the old historical stuff. What, and I'm sure the records are probably foggy at best. What were some of the things that you've been able to kind of surmise about the early part of that part of Eureka? What did you see? What kind of sense do you have of what happened then?
That the original people that built that road were very creative in using the resources available and being able to put a road through an area like that using stumps and planks to get through the muck. No big heavy equipment like we have nowadays. This is a lot of hand labor. The hard work it really took back in the old days to build a road because, it's hard now, we have equipment. Back then, you didn't have much besides donkeys or steam pulleys, and it was people digging with shovels, where we're doing it with big backhoes and dozers.
So was this the original highway into town?
That I can't tell you off the top of my head.
Because it's close enough, Union is close enough to Broadway. They're almost running parallel. So what is the advantage of having one over the unless one was built later on?
Yeah, that one I can't answer to you other than it's always better to have more roads parallel than less roads, just in case something goes wrong.
Road guy speaks.
And plus with volumes, if you got more, you don't have to have extremely wide roads that handle thousands and thousands of vehicles if you have multiple access points. And if you have an accident that shuts down a section of road, you can bypass traffic another direction.
Any idea when this road was originally constructed? Was it pre-car? And this was
I think it was in the early 1900s.
There were cars, but there just weren't that many.
Back then it was, primarily horses.
And a little skinnier.
Yes. And a lot of horses.
So you mentioned that they used the stumps. Were the stumps like pier blocks?
We find a lot of time, not just here, but everywhere. That's how they leveled the area, was they would take the old growth stumps and fill in the ravines and then pour dirt on it to make a flat roadbed. And so, redwood stumps are actually, they're big fill that take up a lot of volume and,
So cut it down halfway close to what you wanted it.
Exactly. So fill up the hole with stumps and then cover it with dirt so you don't have to haul in as much dirt. And the stumps you just logged from next door anyway. And that's a lot of our rural roads were built that way. They just logged their way through, rolled the stumps into the ravines, and built on over them.
Now, you said swamp also. Are there springs in that area, is that a drainage area?
There's a lot of springs and drainage in that area. It's a pretty significant wetland.
Yeah, like you said, swamp.
Well,
in the old days, obviously the street could not be constructed today that way.
No, we follow different rules, but we were able to go through there and construct because we have mitigations that we have to use. If we're going to fill a wetland, we have to mitigate it by creating X plus wetland acres somewhere else.
That's why I was wondering, I guess you could argue that you're maintaining the road that's in place. Does that allow you to use grandfathered rules, or do you have to use today's rules?
We use today's rules. If you're just maintaining an existing road, you're pretty much exempt. But that was a total reconstruction. We've actually moved the road over in certain locations.
Okay, and so you're outside the footprint.
Outside the footprint. There was substantial mitigation for the wetland impacts.
So what part of the county do we lose?
There's an area between Arcata and Eureka that has significant wetlands that the county banked years ago.
Oh, so you just allocate a percentage of that?
Yeah, we purchased areas and recreated wetlands, or will we recreate wetlands on site? If we're moving the road over, we'll create a new wetland where we moved it from.
Does it mean you run a pipe in there and you let it run?
No, it means you dig it down until you get to the muck. You dig out everything, all the fill that's been put on it. You may plant some native vegetation in there. You may redirect some of the water flow that's in the project area into the area.
So that's where you shoot your culvert.
Generally, we avoid.
Gotcha.
We avoid shooting culverts. We leave that for the signs.
Okay, how about you aim the culvert in that direction so when it drains over there?
Yeah, we can move the water to where it needs to go by the direction of the culvert. But
only plastic pipes?
It depends. It depends. Like I say, in forested areas where there's a high risk of fire, that's a debate.
I don't think Union or C Street do that, do you?
Nope.
All right. Well, hopefully not.
But then again, we've got arches, and they don't make very good plastic arches at this point, so we use metal pipe for arches a lot.
And the road project is supposed to be done, you said, sometime this calendar
year? It should be done this fall. That's the current schedule.
Before the rains hit?
October, November-ish, yeah.
Okay.
I won't say before the rains hit because this is Humboldt County.
Yeah, you're kind of hedgy. Okay. When we come back, we'll talk airplanes and airports and grand jury reports. KINS, news and information time. It's 8:44.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Matson. Tom, the airport advisory committee, grand jury report, yada, 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 yada. Some news coverage about that last week. What, from your perspective, what was that all about?
Well, the grand jury looked hard at our airports. It's no secret that they have a real structural deficit problem, and we have to defer a lot of maintenance. A lot of the items that they called out were items we get on our standard inspection checklist, and we try to queue them in as we have people and funds available to make the repairs. They had something about a duplication of service, but didn't state what it was. We do duplicate financial services. Say the budget presentation goes through a number of eyeballs, and maybe they consider that duplication. I consider that due diligence. They talked about maybe a different structure for overseeing the airport. The board discussed that actually this morning, or Tuesday morning at the session, to talk about what we wanted to do. It's time for a deep systems analysis of the airport, of all their doings. What works economically, maybe tying some economic development to it. What can we do to increase the revenues at the airports using the properties?
You're saying plurals. Do most people realize when you say the airport, it's actually the airports?
It's airports. The big one, of course, is ACV, where the commercial service is. But we have Ronerville down in just south of Fortuna. We have Garberville. We have Dinsmore. We have Neyland. And we have Murray, which is a major field for the private pilots.
And so, FedEx.
Yeah. And so
turkeys.
Five of them are general aviation only. And general aviation has been struggling in this country for a long time. So we try to keep rates low to keep the business going.
I would think the toughest thing is the fact that each of those air strips, if you will, are in distinctly unique rural settings. It's not a matter of consolidation. There's somebody who's going to lose if one of those gets shut down.
Well, the community will lose if any of them get shut down. You only have to go back to 1964 and the floods to look at how important the airports were to the community to bring supplies in as a basis of operation. All the roads were out. There was no other way to get supplies into the county. When we look at fire protection, CDF has taken over Garberville at times when there's been major fires in southern Humboldt and operated out of there. So they're very important to the community.
Is there a simple solution?
A simple solution is get more air service, but that seems to be a very difficult solution. But there is something on the horizon. Come 2017, the state will have to start spending all of its aviation fuel tax on airports. They've been diverting about $140 million a year, and the FAA has come down and said that money has to go to airports, or we're going to take federal money away from California. So we're a couple years out. We got to get there, but their first proposal out of the batch would have brought in $100,000 to the Humboldt County Aviation System, and that was based on a $30 million estimate. Now they're up to $140 million.
So that might be your whole fill right there.
That depends where they funnel the money through. The state has three methods of funding aviation. They've got a grant program.
Bad, worse, and oh no.
Great. Which is the grant.
I'll save you. Just say it's time for us to go. Thanks for coming by, Tom. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone. You'll see you then.